Welcome back to the CTO Playbook, the podcast dedicated to helping CTOs excel. In this episode, I'm talking about leading engineers through regular individual meetings or one-to-one meetings. This is a topic that has a lot written about it in the past, so I'm focusing on the cadence and structure of these meetings, specifically for individual contributors. How often should we meet? What should we talk about? How should I help my employees? How should we record what we talked about? These are questions that I get asked all of the time, as there are such a wide variety of leadership experiences just within engineering roles. I'm your host, Adam Horner, and as a coach for CTOs from startups to enterprises, I empower tech leaders to escape the cycle of lurching from crisis to crisis and build the skills to lead with confidence, clarity, and purpose. I provide practical, personalized coaching tailored to the challenges faced in your organization, helping each CTO shift from reactive problem-solving to proactive strategic leadership. I help each CTO forge their own path for growth, allowing them to delegate confidently, align engineering with the business, and fully step into their role as a trusted, respected peer at the executive table. This podcast enables me to bring some awesome playbooks to you and the many CTOs that are looking to broaden their knowledge base. Between me and my guests, we cover valuable topics for executive tech leaders, providing insights, strategies, and practical advice to help you build and refine your own playbook so that you can excel as a CTO. This episode is not really about technical processes or engineering best practices. It's about personal performance management. Whether you're leading a small team where all of the individual contributors report directly to you, whether you're scaling or have a larger team and you need to equip your team leads with a strong coaching framework, then this is the system that I recommend. I've personally used this method to help individual contributors thrive, aligning their work with a company strategy while keeping performance management simple, structured, and most importantly, effective. So let's get into it. Now, managing individual contributors needs a structured approach. We're structured people, engineers, we tend to come with a structured mentality and a structured background. So let's take the same approach to helping them with performance. Imagine this. Imagine you've got a high-performing sports team, and each athlete has their own coach, a customized training plan, you know, regular check-ins to refine techniques. They're building resilience. They're using all the tricks like ice baths, and they track progress. Now, as a CTO, your job isn't to micromanage or dictate every move, but to ensure that every individual contributor has the guidance, the feedback, and the alignment that they need to perform at their best, because that's what this is about. It's about bringing out the best performance that you can do for each individual you have. So that brings us to the core concepts then. Alignment, cadence, and integration. What do I mean by that? Alignment is basically making sure that everybody can connect their own performance from the organization's goals down to what it is that they're doing. So the company's mission should connect to each individual what they're doing and how they're going about it. That was what I mean by alignment. In terms of cadence, I have a very strong view on cadence, and this comes from my experience. It comes down to weekly meetings. Now, some people I have heard, well, weekly is too often. I need to be able to meet people less often than that. It takes too much time. And to that, I say that if you're leading individual contributors, the leading of them is where you should be putting your time and effort. And that's why I suggest weekly. Now, it doesn't have to be an hour every week. In fact, for most people, I find that 30 minutes a week is perfect. It's about the right amount of time. There are some people for whom you'll want to do more time. And in those cases, some people say, well, we can do 2 meetings during a week, 3 meetings during a week. I find that's okay if you're micromanaging somebody when you have to. Occasionally, that's required, that's needed. But then your default should fall back to being a weekly meeting. Whether you decide to do 30 minutes or an hour, entirely up to you. Other people say, well, once every 2 weeks or once every month. I find the problem with less than weekly is that there is a momentum that gets lost over that time. So you might agree to do something. Your employee might agree to step up on some area, start working on something. Weekly is a good amount of time for us to come back to, nudge that performance meter, help them move forward with it. You tend to lose momentum and impact when it's a longer cycle. Now, that's not to say it doesn't work like this for everybody. For example, if you've got some very high-performing individuals, they have decided not to go down a management track and they are experts at what they do. often they get a lot better at that level and seniority of managing their time, managing their approach, managing how they go. And so therefore, the one-to-one is more of a check-in. And often when you get somebody who's that senior, then yeah, 30 minutes every 2 weeks might be absolutely fine. It might be all they need. In other cases, I've worked with senior folks for whom they prefer 1 hour every 2 weeks. The cadence works better for them just because they've got so many things that they're working on. And that's fine too. There is no one size fits all, but my default is going to be weekly. And the other thing is integration. By integration, I mean that this system should not replace your organization's career evaluation framework, the system that you use for bonuses, for promotions and career improvements. It should complement and enhance that. It should fit into it. And what I find is that adding these meetings in onto that, fitting into that framework, becomes fairly straightforward and easy if you stick to a few key principles. So we'll go through that. So the alignment, cadence, and integration. Now, there's three time frames that are used to keep individual contributors on track. We've mentioned weekly. In addition to weekly, then there is also the quarterly meetings. And then there's the annual meetings, which are typically used for bonuses, salary adjustments, career band evaluations, and normally fit into a framework, whether you're using something like one of the structured and managed frameworks, or whether you're using an approach where you level everybody to the industry. There's many different frameworks out there. The whole point is that this fits in and aligns with it. So the quarterly we'll go through, annual we'll go through, but I'm going to start off by going through first the weekly meeting and then cover quarterly after that and annual at the end. So the weekly one-to-one then, it's your most powerful tool in your leadership management arsenal because of the fact that it's that high frequency and it is one-to-one. It is just you and the other person. And I'm very much recommending at the individual contributor level where it's a one-to-one meeting. Group coaching can work, but tends to only work when people join the company in cohorts and are going through a specific program of learning. So it's not generally my recommended approach. Can work in some scenarios. Typically, one-to-one is going to be the best way to go. So there are other frameworks as well when weekly is not the best. If you have somebody who is going through a performance improvement plan, that can also be a grounds for running a session every 2 days, for example. If you've got somebody who's on a performance improvement plan, your job then is to really help them improve that performance. And so one-to-one weekly coaching sometimes isn't enough. It often isn't enough. So there's another example where you'd be going more often. So if you think of the one-to-one as a recurring conversation, then the weekly one-to-one is a recurring conversation where the frequency of it matters more than the length. And because it's a recurring conversation rather than a rigid meeting, it's not a project status update. It's not a stand-up. It's about the person. It's not about the work. So how do we structure this meeting? How do we put it together? And how do we make it valuable? The most important thing I start off with every single time is an open-ended, easygoing question that eases into the meeting. How's things going? How's the week been? Anything on your mind? What's up? Something very simple, straightforward, open, that it's an open-ended question. And you want to talk about anything, life, family, personal interests. Maybe it gets to the work straight away, but you're a leader who's got to build trust and build rapport. So ask an open-ended question and really listen to the answers. Really engage with the person. If they start talking about how they went out with their kids, ask them about their kids. Ask them what they did with their kids. Ask them what they love about their kids, which sports they're doing, which activities they're doing. Listen and be engaged. Building that trust and building that rapport will come so important later on when you're beginning to ask them to do things, to make changes, to do something difficult. That trust becomes essentially your main currency. As a good guide in these one-to-one meetings, you should be doing most of the listening and they should be doing most of the talking. Now, it's very easy to not get that balance right. So if you need to readjust that, think about asking questions that are more general, more broad, or simply leave silence. Most people feel uncomfortable in silence and will strive to fill it. It is a simple, straightforward trick that can help to get the other person talking, which is basically where you want to go. Then it should become easier to ask the right question to guide the conversation in the direction where you need it to go. Silence is difficult. It takes patience. It takes practice to do it well. But silence left at the right time can really bring somebody out of where they're at and start to talk more. Some of the things that you want to avoid, though, in these meetings. These meetings are, as I say, it's not about the project. It's not about the technology. It's not about deep dives. This is about them. So try and steer the conversation away from status updates, from retrospectives, from group concerns or work, leave those for the correct meetings where they should be in, and guide the person to say, this is great information, but this is the kind of thing you probably should be mentioning in the stand-up or in the sprint planning, or this is something that we should bring up in the retrospective because it involves everybody. Instead, try and focus on personal growth, their position in the team dynamic, and values. How well does this person live, believe, understand the values of themselves and of their organization? Topics to help engineers with in particular are things like communication and convincing people, getting their perspective across, getting their opinions heard. Sometimes this is just a case of encouraging them to speak up. A lot of the time it's a case of when people are listening, this is something that in most other verticals within the business, somebody who's coming up through the sales process, somebody who's learning marketing, listening is a key skill that is almost taught deliberately in those areas. And it's one of those areas that becomes slightly lacking on the engineering side. So if you want to give your engineers a level up on the whole balance of the company, help them to listen. And it's often one of the weaker skills because of the fact that in engineering, we can get away with not listening. We can read a lot, figure things out, and read between the lines. We can switch off when we're not speaking and get away with it a lot of the time. But it does undermine trust and rapport, exactly the same as you're trying to build with these people. They're trying to build with each other. So active listening when they're not speaking and when they're not that interested, listen to understand, listen to ask questions. That goes for you and it goes for them. So show them examples of how they can do it. Show them examples of when they haven't done it. And then when it comes to actually having influence, wielding influence, speaking at the right time and speaking with reference to the other things that people have said. Now that becomes easy if you're listening, becomes really hard if you're not. So if people aren't listening, try and encourage them to say something and make it relate, follow on from, or add to something that somebody else has just said. That way, when they come to say, well, I think we should be doing something this way, they'll have more trust, more credibility, and more of a bond with the other people that they're asking to make a change. Another way of helping this out then is to focus on the experience of being in the team, of doing their work, of contributing, and of getting feedback. So rather than just asking questions like, how's the project going? Ask something that's a bit more specific to their involvement. What's been the most frustrating part of being involved in the project recently? If you were to do that again, what would you like to see happen differently? And then help them steer the conversation. Often people will focus on, especially engineers, on things that are outside of their sphere of control. And so helping them understand the difference between what they can control, what's within their control, and what they can control, their own reactions, their own perspectives, their own ways of working, the way that they communicate what they're working on, the way that they try and convince other people, these are areas that are really great to talk about. And then you can shift the focus of the conversation from output to experience. And I say shift because there is always a tendency for us as engineers to be kind of procedural and talk about how things are moving along in terms of progress. But really, we need to talk about the experience and the perspective. Recording meetings, the one-to-one. This is one of these things that takes practice at doing. Typing while talking or writing while listening is something that takes a bit of practice. But I think it's really important. I think it's a mistake to run one-to-one meetings and to not write anything down. I think if you go into a meeting with nothing written down, have a conversation and there's nothing written down at the end of it, it's very difficult to see what was done. It's very difficult to see the value of it. And it's very easy to dismiss the time that you spent as not contributing in any way. So keep notes. The way that I do this and the way that I recommend everybody else does this is with something called a rolling agenda document. At its simplest, a rolling agenda is basically a list of things that were discussed where for each meeting, you put the new latest meeting conversation notes at the top of the document above the previous meeting notes. And the reason it's called rolling is because the older ones just roll off the bottom and the most recent is always at the top. As a concept, it's very straightforward. It means that there's always a place for you to put in the notes and it always means that the most recent notes, the last few weeks, are right there at the top of the document. I then add to the rolling agenda a few things to make it a more permanent and persistent document that is useful to refer to and use. One of them is an open agenda. Typically, this goes straight above the rolling agenda. And the open agenda should, straight after a meeting, hopefully, be empty because you'll have discussed all the things that you had open on your plate. The open agenda then is a place where during the week, as soon as you think, oh, I must talk to that person about that, open up that document in the open agenda section, write down some notes. It'll mean that you can remember when you get to it. And then you can forget about it because you've recorded it, you're done, and you know that it's going to be picked up in the next meeting. And that forms the basis of, or one of the things you're talking about in the next meeting. So the open agenda means that you can have a very simple, straightforward way. When you're a leader, if you've got one of these rolling agenda documents for each of the people who report directly to you, it means that you can have all of those notes and thoughts for each person in their own document, in their own place, and you can just drop the notes into them whenever it occurs to you, whenever you think, I must have a chat with them about that. Or when somebody else mentions to you that something that needs to have a conversation with them about, put it into that document and you know that's going to get picked up in the next conversation. Very simple, very straightforward. I often then also have a section in that document for immediate actions. So things that you've agreed on that you're going to do, things that you've suggested are going to be important to come back to in the future. Not the kind of workflow things that you would do. Not, oh, I must do this ticket in Jira. I must make sure I complete this project. That has a different place to live. This is literally just a place to store the things that we need to talk about in the future that have a done and action item to them. I then also make it slightly more complex than a simple, straightforward to-do list because of the fact that I'll say, okay, after we've completed that or done it, we'll put it on the list and check it off and leave it there until the next week. So the next time we can come back and think, okay, we did that last time. Anything else to talk about it? All done? And if it's all done, delete it. There's another way in which it's different from a workflow or to-do system, productivity system. I don't keep the history because once it's done, it's done. We've discussed everything there was to discuss about it and there's no need to cover it again or remember it. So take it out of that area. There are often then two other things that I put into the rolling agenda document that maintain with each person. And those are a mission statement, normally put this at the very top, and a personal development plan, which normally goes second. Now, there's plenty you can go and read about on the web in various different places about writing these two different documents. And there's a lot of overlap and blur between them, honestly. The way I define the two differently is like this. A mission statement is you personally, what you want to achieve in your life. It's longer than this job, potentially even longer than your career. It is what you want to be known for, what you want to be remembered for, what do you want to achieve? And it's big picture. It covers a whole life, basically. And often this, I will not even begin to fill this out when I'm first working with somebody. I'll often wait until I've been working with them for months to build up that understanding, the trust and the rapport before somebody says, well, here's from my heart, the greatest thing I want to do. So I will spend some time before that. And then I'll use one of the many frameworks there are out there to help structure and put together that mission statement. The personal development plan is similar, but different. I define the personal development plan as being something that is specific to this role, to this employment. How do you want to develop within this employment? And this often talks about things like promotion and the steps to the next grade up, or recognition and how do I get more influence and impact. So the personal development plan is how do I develop within the role, within the job that I'm in right now, and what would be the next steps? And that is a rolling agenda document, very simple and very straightforward. There's a huge value to writing things down. I'll give you a couple of examples of where I found big value to writing things down versus the almost default approach of just having a chat once a week and seeing how things are going. I was working with one person quite a long time ago now, and she basically struggled with confidence in a lot of different ways. But one of the key ones was confidence, whether she was in the right or she was in the wrong. Now, we'd written down conversations we'd had as time had gone along. And at one point, an event occurred and somebody else hadn't done something. There was a bit of a discussion between the two of them. And they agreed at the point that she had actually done her part of it and the other person hadn't done their part of it. And that was then several months back. At some point, it came up again in the future talking about this thing. And the other person had managed to convince her that it was the other way around, that it was her that hadn't done it versus the he that had done this thing. Now, what that thing was, the details were lost in the past. It kind of doesn't really matter anymore. Point was, it was written down that she had done it and she had been waiting for him to finish his part of it. And so now when it came to her doubting her own memory, she was able to look back at this, gain a lot of confidence from it, and then change the conversation with that other person going forwards and built her confidence significantly just from having been able to remember and put herself in the mindset of, no, I was in the right. And I was doing this correctly. So just having things written down can add to performance through something like confidence. Very straightforward. Very powerful, but very straightforward. The other side of writing things down and the value of it is on the not so fun side of being a leader. Every now and again, you need to let somebody go or to let somebody go, put somebody through a performance improvement plan. Having things written down can make that process much simpler. This really came very, very strongly to light for me when I was leading somebody who had joined the business and whose performance had never really quite been there, but was almost there, but wasn't really quite at the level that was expected. As a leadership group, we decided that we would take this person through a performance improvement plan, didn't see any particular performance improvements, and it came to the process of making sure that we could let them go. Now, because it was quite a borderline one, the lawyer in the company was very concerned and wanted to make sure that we'd covered a lot of things off. And at that point, I pulled out my history of the rolling agenda document, and I didn't do this lightly. I keep this document private. I keep this document between me and the person who I'm talking to. And that's very important. You must keep this document secure between those two people. But in this case, it was a legal situation. And I pulled out a few of the key things that I'd recorded when they'd been recorded and showed the lawyer that, of course, that's a relationship that's under confidence, that this had been recorded at the time and in this process. And he was very happy. The lawyer basically said to me that reduced the risk to the company significantly of taking that person through the process of letting them go at the end of this performance improvement plan. Now, a good performance improvement plan, there should be very little risk. In this situation, it was a little bit touchy, and the lawyer was very happy with it. So it's a good example of why writing things down can be very powerful and save you a lot of extra work further down the line. Hopefully, though, you have more of the positive examples than of negative examples. So one of the other questions that I get with a one-to-one is, we've got this time together. What do I talk about? How do I get them to open up? What's the value of doing this? And I think one of the key things here is it's about learning. Learning for that person and learning for you as a leader how to get the other person to level up, to get more out of their work, to basically help them improve themselves and their approach. When it comes to learning, I find that there's one key difference as to whether you can help people learn very quickly from a common understanding or whether you don't quite get it, don't quite get how they learn. And it comes down to something that's really simple once you understand it, and seems like magic when you don't. It's called the VARK model. And here's how I use it. First of all, what do these four things stand for? It's the visual, oral, read, write, and kinesthetic. Visual learners are those people who learn things and pick things up by seeing something. They will typically draw things out. They're normally the ones who are the first to the whiteboard to draw pictures of systems and platforms and architects and the way that things call visual, very graphical. They want to see a picture of something. Oral learners are the people who will listen to something. They'll listen to how something sounds. When they're writing text, they might often, for example, get someone to read it out so that they can listen to it. They might make excessive use of Notebook LM from Google, where it basically turns information into a little podcast to listen to. They'll be the kinds of people who listen to podcasts, frankly. So oral listeners, you need to hear how it sounds. There's the people who are read-write learners. And I actually see a lot of these read-write learners in the engineering world. People who absolutely have to have something written down for them to be able to see it, understand it, to grasp it. And they'll often write things out themselves. I spotted one such person like this. It was a CEO I was working with. And he always used to have a notebook in his hands, always. And we'd be in any meeting and he'd be writing things in his notebook. And at one point, I went into his office and he opened up his cupboard and I saw this huge stack of notebooks that had been very, very neatly stacked in there. And I said, wow, do you reference them often? He said, no, I don't reference them at all. I said, well, why do you have them if you need them? He said, well, I have to write it down. If I write things down, I can remember it. Then I don't have any problem. My memory is the act of writing it down. This is a classic read-write learner. And then there's the kinesthetic learners. These people are hands-on, physical. They want to create a real model of something. I don't see so many kinesthetic learners in software engineering because of the fact that it's not something that you do with your hands and you work with your hands. For some people, that might translate into using a keyboard to do it, but typically it's more like using a 3D model, getting hands-on. People in hardware, people with building physical things, much more likely place where you'll find engineers who are kinesthetic learners. But typically it's touch, it's feel, and how things work. So how can you use this to your advantage, this knowledge of VARK? When I'm asking open-ended questions, I try and get the right one of those four questions to ask. I can ask exactly the same question in four different ways. I'll give you an example, right? I'll go through visual. What did that look like to you? For oral, it might be, how does that sound to you? For read-write learners, it might be, well, what do you read into this situation? Kinesthetic learners, it might be, what does that feel like? It's almost exactly the same question, but it's phrased in a way that is going to resonate with each of those four different kinds of learners. If you get the right type of question to the right person, it almost doesn't matter what you're asking about. If you ask it in the right way, sound, look, read, write, how does it feel? you will end up with getting a response coming back that is thought through, immediate, and it is instinctive because it matches the way that they learn. Ask the right question and it just clicks. And that small shift in asking questions in the right way turns coaching and teaching from something that's labored into something that's intuitive and tailored. So we've covered the one-to-one then in just enough detail to understand how we can make a one-to-one really valuable and useful and how to get it to match and resonate with the person we're talking to. So once we're doing that weekly, then we've got to bridge the gap between weekly and the annual reviews. So the intermediate step is the quarterly meeting. Quarterly performance meeting. Now, the best structure I ever saw and came up with for this, it wasn't me that came up with it, there's a wonderful lady called Annalie that I worked with at Realforce. She came up with this structure called the Q45, very simply named because it's quarterly and it's 45 minutes long. And typically it breaks into sort of four sections, really. Essentially, it is a document that the person will fill out and you as the leader will fill out separately so you don't see each other's answers. And then the conversation itself is where you bring the two together and talk about the differences between the two. If you've been on the same page for most of that quarter, and the one-to-ones should really do that, then there won't be an awful lot of differences to discuss, especially on the things that have happened. So you'll be able to spend more time talking about what's going to happen. So the four sections then, reviewing the last quarter's goals, OKRs, the aims of the team, whatever it is that you're using to manage your organization, it's reviewing the last quarter's OKRs with respect to the conversations you've been having so far. The second section should be reflecting on the non-tangible things, values, culture, team dynamics, posing a few questions in there about what that person's contribution was to the team, how well they've lived out the values of in the culture, how well they've contributed to other people and helping them. These are the kinds of things that go into the second section. And I find is very useful for helping somebody understand what it means to be within this team, within this company. The third section then, setting personal development goals for the next quarter. Well, the last two were looking backwards. Number three is looking forwards. What are we going to do next quarter? What are our goals going to be? How do those align with the goals of the organization? And lastly, the fourth section, providing and receiving performance feedback on leadership. So for the leader, this should be a bit of a self-reflection. In this quarter, I have strived to do this. I have fallen short in these areas. I have provided a good scenario for these. And for the employee, that's a great place to be able to give feedback on the leadership that they're getting. And that should be direct feedback to you, but also to any other leaders that they experience in the organization. And as I say, I do this as a two-document approach, one filled out by me, one filled out by the individual contributor. And the value in the conversation is, it isn't in that filling the document out beforehand. The value is in discussing the differences between the two. And I find that it's really working well when you spend most of your time on section three. What is going to be the goals for the next quarter? Because the weekly one-to-one should have already covered the past performance. And that part then should be feel like, so part one should feel like a natural summary, really. So that's a quarterly review. Fairly simple, fairly straightforward. And it should feel as though it takes the concern, the worry, and the stress out of reviews, because it's basically just a roll-up of the last 13 one-to-ones you've had, assuming you worked every week during the quarter. The next thing then is you roll it up into the annual review, and it's like the final chapter in a year-long story. And by the time you reach the end of the annual review, there's no more surprises, right? It's simply the fourth quarterly review, but with a slightly zoomed-out perspective that rolls up the other three together as well. And when you've done that, it makes processes like promotions, salary discussions, title changes, these all become a lot smoother. And if, for example, you also, as a leader, need to make a case for promotions, for outsized bonuses, or for changes in title, changes in role, you've got a strong set of evidence to show and a continuous feedback loop that you can demonstrate. So expectations are really clear. And it should make the process for you as somebody who is proposing and supporting those changes in role, changes in recognition, a lot easier. I had an example of this at an organization I was working with quite some time back, where I'd been keeping this process. My notes weren't quite as good then as they are now, but there was a consistency. There was a couple of bullet points for every week during the year. And when it came to the end of the year, there was one particular person who pretty much all of the team had spoken about, said, oh, this guy's so good. He should be, you know, the team leader for the team. And the reason it helped me personally was because it helped me demonstrate that he should actually be in my role. And I was able to take on a slightly larger role. Now, if there hadn't been that person ready to step into the role that I was taking, it would have been a lot more difficult for me to suggest that I should be in a different role as well. And having the evidence not only of one person, but of several people saying through their reviews, this person should be the team leader, it made that process a lot easier and more straightforward for me. And it made it much easier for everybody else to also support that position because they could see the evidence. Annual reviews should feel like an annual progression. It should not be nerve-wracking judgment day for anybody, for you or for the person being reviewed. And by making sure that your weekly compounds into the quarterly and the quarterly compounds into the annual review, it takes all of that nerves out of it. So in summary then, let's put it all together. The five-step playbook for leading individual contributors, the key points. Meet weekly. Consistency is more important than the length of that meeting. Maintain a rolling agenda document. The continuity of writing things down builds trust and it serves as great evidence when you need to use it. Listen to learn, not just to respond. Every other position in the organization, communication and listening is taught quite literally. Do the same for your people. Teach them how to listen, teach them how to communicate. 4, play the learning game. Understand how people learn. Visual, oral, read, write, kinesthetic. It makes your coaching approach so much more powerful when you can ask questions in their style of learning. And then lastly, most obviously, roll up your insights from weekly to quarterly to annual. Small actions compound over time and make the process significantly easier. As a final thought then, if you're a CTO and you're managing ICs directly, or if you're guiding your team leads in how they should be leading their ICs, this approach, it ensures alignment, it gives some fairly straightforward structure and yet simple to use, and it gives clarity. It keeps the process human and hopefully makes performance management really effective. If this resonated with you, I'd love to hear your thoughts. And if you found it useful, feel free to share it with another CTO or another leader who you think would benefit. Until next time, keep leading with impact and keep coaching an everyday part of the CTO role.
Thank you very much for listening all the way through to the end. Just before you go, I'd like to ask you for one thing in return for putting together all these episodes of the CTO Playbook podcast for you. Please leave a review. Wherever you're listening, whether that is Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whichever platform you're on, leaving a quick review will help more CTOs find the podcast and enable me to create more great episodes. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode of the CTO Playbook.